365, and that's what we've been looking into, and that's what we'll be talking about today. So I'll be running through some of the reasons for the project, what we were trying to achieve, a little bit of an explanation about the different areas, and Elaine's going to be talking us through some of the demonstrations, walking through those for us. So let's get started. Before I talk about the goals of the project, it's important to understand some of the broad challenges that the Department of Education faces. The Department of Education in Victoria is not the largest in the country, but it's still quite large. The state of Victoria covers approximately 200,000 square kilometres, and we have schools distributed across the breadth and depth and width and height of that state from end to end, and that provides some interesting challenges in itself. We have over 70,000 teaching staff and over 500,000 students. So delivering IT services to that group of people is quite a challenge. Specifically for this project, though, we were trying to set about to create a collaboration and communication platform. And it truly is both of those things. It's not strictly about collaboration and it's not strictly about communication. And you'll see when we get into the details how we've addressed that. Infrastructure costs for the department can be enormous. As I explained, there is a very large user base that we're dealing with. So when we provision new systems, new services, nothing is small. It's always on a large scale for us, and that provides a lot of challenges. We have a mandate now to be looking into cloud services and cloud offerings through the whole of Vic government ICT strategy review, and similar reviews have been done around the country and at a national level as well. And they've all really pointed the way towards investigating cloud offerings. So we're really interested in how we can reduce our infrastructure costs, keeping in mind that those costs are not just putting servers in data centres or on premises or in schools, but also the maintenance costs that come along with that, renewing that hardware when it comes out of warranty, supporting that hardware, making sure it's got the right antivirus and all the other things that come along with that. As I mentioned, we are investigating these cloud services as we've been instructed to do, and we're really excited about the potential here. It was also critical for this project that we provided a level of functionality for non-technical users. As you can imagine, we have teachers from a variety of backgrounds. We have office staff and students themselves that have varying degrees of technical competence, because we cover everything from the early childhood years through to the end of secondary school. So it is a very interesting challenge for us to make sure that we're covering that breadth. So when we deliver these services, we have to be very careful not to deliver things that assume a high level of technical competence. We also have to be cautious that we're not imposing additional training burden on the people that then use it. We're spending our time trying to educate kids, and we don't want to have to take time away from that to teach them how to use a new IT system. And really, it's about getting content out to the schools, out to the teachers, and out to the students in the classroom quicker. As we've talked about throughout the entire conference, and you've heard in the keynote, the speed of technology is fast, and we need to be able to deliver our services and deliver our content out to our user base as quickly and effectively as we can, lest we be left behind. To tell you a little bit about the project timeline, before we started, we underwent a comprehensive review of the way that schools and teachers and students are using ICT. That study was undertaken by a third-party professional services firm. They were very thorough. They investigated all the different ways that things are being used. And that was to set a bit of a baseline, a bit of a mark that we can measure to. We then engaged with OBS to create a solution. And that kicked off around March in 2013. So we're now at the point, as you can see in the yellow-orange highlight, we're now at a point where we're trialling this service with a number of schools, a small group, to get them across what we've developed, so that they can test it out for themselves before we more broadly deploy.
One of the interesting things, I think, well, When they say small group, they mean 30,000 people here. So, that's, you know, right, this is the definition of the department small group. Was a little bit of a shock, you know, proof of concept, 30,000 people. Normally it's 100, 200, 1,000.
Yeah, absolutely. So for us, that is small. We don't want to go to the full 500,000 students and 70,000 teachers all in one hit. We want to make sure that the services that we're developing and then delivering are going to work and they're going to hit their marks. So the next step will be to perform a full benefits analysis, look at how this technology impacted those students, those teachers, those schools, again, to be performed by a third party, a dispassionate observer, so that we have a really solid understanding. There's no doubt about what we've achieved. And if we're successful, we're looking to roll out more broadly. And that's actually one of the really exciting things about this project, that when we decide to go wider in our distribution of this service, it's just a few clicks of a mouse button. It's something that for the department is really exciting, because typically expanding the delivery of our services requires this very significant investment. And as we'll see throughout this, that investment is significantly reduced through this approach. So I'll hand over to Elaine, who's going to take you through the solution, give you a bit of an idea of what I'm actually talking about, and we'll pick it up from there.
Great. So everything you're going to see here is what we've built in Office 365. It took us around 6 weeks from start to finish to build, which is, you know, a fairly rapid timeline for rolling out a system. That included sitting with the customer and actually doing rapid prototyping. So one of the great things about this was we were able to demonstrate this right throughout the development phase. The first thing you can see up here is basically what the teacher's view of the system. So each school is given a SharePoint site, which covers the basic features that they want to use. Up the top here, we've got a news rotator that allows them to target news through to teachers and to students. And we have events down this side here as well. We just put in some nice controls as well to allow people to pause and play for accessibility reasons, which is one of the very important things that the department concentrates on. And we go down into our second news section down the bottom below. We've also added some links to be able to provide common functionality and some of the privacy features as well around reporting abuse in case there is anyone using the system that feels unfairly talked to through Link or Exchange. As a teacher, I actually don't have email and Link on this platform. That's because they have a departmental rollout of Exchange and Link already. So they're using their in-house services for those bits and pieces. And it's really just the SharePoint communication platform that's being added on for those schools. Then we go down and there are some capabilities to provide links and staff sites, but the main feature is a class site per class. And if we link on through to this one, and it's pink for a reason, we'll show changing the colours in a minute. This is a class site, so each class can have one of these sites, very customisable, and it can be really tailored to whatever the class is actually about. First feature at the top is the class blog. Then we go through to having some resources, loading documents, PDFs, any information that teacher wants to get out to the class, and also the ability to assign tasks, whether it's class assignments, we're going on an excursion, anything the teacher wants to communicate through. And down the bottom, a news feature as well. One of the interesting features that we've added as well is some integration with a system that the department built quite a few years ago now, I think Fuse was built. Yeah, about 4 years ago. So this is quite old technology that's sitting on the internet there. It allows people to store learning resources. One of the great things about this system when it was built is the department had the foresight to put an RSS interface onto it. So when we came to Office 365, we didn't want to drag that content that's already stored in a separate system through. So what we've done is just a nice little integration piece that basically loads a dialogue, allows us to search into that system using the RSS interface, return search results back, and then with a few clicks of a button, save it in and populate that link onto the class site and integrate the two systems together. That took less than a day worth of work because all the interfaces were there to click on through. You know, typically when you're talking integration between systems, people think it's weeks and months of work, but that's not the case because everything was there that was needed. If we click on through now, we'll see the students' view of the world. So same kind of features that they can see, but I don't know if you noticed there was different events. And they don't have any of those plus icons. At the school level, we don't want students to be able to go in, add things to the calendar, put up, you know, their birthday as a news item. They're a little bit more restricted, obviously, at the school level. So they really just have targeted news pointed towards them, links and a calendar. They also do have, though, Outlook and Link up there, so they can communicate with each other, and the address books and the communication is federated, so they can talk back to the teachers. And this allows them to, for the first time, to kind of provide students with that capability. As we go down into the class site, this is where the experience becomes a little bit more interactive for the student. So they can't add class calendar events or class resources, but they can go into the blog and provide any posts that they like into that area as well. We've also gone through and provided a customised toolbar for each of the additional activities we wanted to add onto the system. For students, this is the capability to submit my work. So I can go in here, put any assignment work I need to put in there or a link, publish it through, and that will actually go through to the teacher of this class and submit it on through. Teachers and administrators see some different links, which we'll talk about in the next demo. We've also given students the ability to have SkyDrive, and this allows them to have a lot of personal storage of information, so if they want to do their schoolwork on here, they can. But one of the other features that's really exciting is that they can see the task roll-ups. So, you know, if they're only in one class, which would be very unlikely at a school, they would just go to the class site and they could see their tasks here. But on this My Site piece, they can actually see every task assigned to them by any teacher right across the system, providing them with a really nice way to start scheduling some of those work pieces. All right, we'll flip back to the slides. Okay, so some of the pieces you saw there, very, very basic overview of just what we've done, giving email and link to students, not to teachers. They're using their on-premises services for those pieces. We're providing a communication site for each school, so they get a large amount of space where they can push information out, both targeted towards students and towards teachers. And each class is a SharePoint sub-site, so the teacher has control of that site and can customise it based on those classes' needs. Now, Aaron's going to talk a little bit about why we went with Office 365.
Yeah, that flows in really nicely. Thanks, Elaine, for that demo. So there's a few things that I've already hinted towards earlier on, and as you've seen Elaine go through that, I'm sure you've picked up on a couple of things that would help you to come to the conclusion of why we might have done that. But to be a bit more specific, we're able to deliver those services, everything you've seen there, with no infrastructure, no additional infrastructure within the department, within the department's data centres or in schools. And that's, as I've already alluded to, extremely impressive for us, I guess is one way to put it. We're really excited about this solution by what it offers. The agility, the ability for us to very quickly ramp this up, get it out, try it, and see if it works. That's something that we've never really had before, so it's quite exciting for us. But also the connect from anywhere aspects around Office 365 and connect with anything. So we know we've got a lot of schools that have a variety of different devices in various different form factors with who knows what operating systems on them. We'd certainly still have desktops that we have out in schools, but we know that the bring your own device movement is happening very quickly. So we needed a platform that was going to work and just work. We didn't want to be imposing a big support burden on us by choosing the wrong platform here. So knowing that Office 365 will cater to all of those devices is a really big bonus for us. But also the single sign-on aspect. So teachers and students have identity within the department already. Being able to leverage that and allow them to sign on to existing services and then into the 365 platform without any mess or any fuss, this is a really powerful feature and really helps us out. We were dreading the thought of needing to provision additional identities to move into some other system. We already have identity there, so knowing that they can do that is excellent. And there's the familiarity. As Elaine mentioned, we already give exchange access to teachers throughout the state. So giving them a platform that's still on the Microsoft technologies, they're familiar with SharePoint already through the intranet and extranet capabilities that we're using already, that's another big bonus for us. Like I hinted at earlier, we don't want to need to train everybody around this. Sorry?
Quick question. For education as well, the embedded software, have you gone with the data sovereignty?
Yeah, data sovereignty is a great question, and we will touch on that shortly. I think just to give you a really quick answer, though, what we're trying to achieve with this is, we're very conscious about privacy and actually, it might be best if I leave that until a little bit later on. So thank you for the question. I'll make sure we address it. And if I don't, please, hold me to it. That familiarity with the existing systems that they use is very important. Speed with this system is amazing. And I'd love for Elaine to throw an extra 100,000 licenses in today and show you how that builds up. But the ability to just turn on more users and plug them into this as needed is quite impressive. And as Elaine mentioned, the speed to deliver this solution was quite impressive. And again, hark back to the keynote where we're talking about these ideas of the speed of technology. Well, this is a great example of that, which also ties into that iterative approach. And Elaine's going to talk a little bit more about that in a moment, how we've been able to work together between the vendor and the customer here to be able to change things on the fly and allow us to see the work that was going on as it was happening just by connecting to that 365 tenant. So let's talk a little bit about what everyone's getting out of this. Elaine's already touched on this a little bit, but I'll go into a little bit more detail for you. As a school, I get a site for communicating out to my teachers and students, and I can put all my news, calendars, links, that sort of information up there. It's at the school level, so it's fairly broad. I also get 100 gigabytes of storage. Straight away, it's there, ready to go. Every school that's on this platform gets that. They can put whatever they like in it. We give them a few suggestions, but really it's up to them how they want to use that space. There's no real restrictions there. They have control over the look and feel, and Elaine's going to give us a little bit of a demo of this in a moment to show you how they can customise that and really make it their own space within the platform. As a teacher, I'm getting targeted news delivered to me by the school. I've got events and links as well. I also have a customizable site to communicate with my class or classes, and that includes the resources, which Elaine mentioned around the Fuse system, being able to link that learning content in and deliver it in a targeted way straight out to those students that are in my class. I've also got blogs, task assignment, announcements, and of course the schoolwork aspect of it as well. And as a student, this part we're really excited about. We're delivering email with 25 gigabytes of storage to every student through this platform. And the thought of us doing that before in our own data centres is kind of terrifying. But with this platform, we can deliver it straight away. No mess, no fuss. And that's quite impressive. When you then add on top of that the link connectivity and the ability for students to collaborate with teachers through the link platform, it's a really compelling story, I think. And you're probably picking up on how excited I am about it, and I think we all are. It's a pretty cool thing that we can do here. We've also got that 7 gigabytes of storage per student as well. So when you multiply out those numbers and you think about potentially reaching an audience of over 500,000 students, this storage alone adds up very, very quickly. Again, if we provision that in our normal data centres, that would have an enormous cost, particularly for a project that we're only trialling at the moment. If we decide not to go ahead for whatever reason, if we had to provision that hardware ourselves and support it ourselves, that's a sunk cost there. So can't stress how big a deal that is for us.
And I believe Microsoft just announced they're going to up the 7 gig. I think it's a 25 per student. So. Yeah.
It gets to be some pretty crazy numbers, which we might have a look at a little bit more in a moment. In terms of the department, it's terabytes of data. Just in this trial alone, I think we're looking at something like, about 14 terabytes at the moment that we have allocated, and that's just for the trial. So, it's a pretty big deal. But really, it's also about that agility. I've worked with a number of organisations where just the act of setting something up like this might have added weeks or months to a project. And then if something changes in the middle, if we have some change of requirement as we go through, shifting direction in a way that requires more hardware can really bog down projects. And this project's been able to adapt to a number of challenges that have come up with ease. And it's the low management overhead as well. It's not that there's no management overhead with 365, but there is certainly a reduced overhead here. We don't have to worry about maintaining the antivirus software on servers. We don't have to worry about the intricacies of the backup restore and all the other bits and pieces that come along for the ride. So for us, again, when you're talking on these sorts of scales, but even on smaller scales, it all adds up. So it's a pretty big deal for us. It wouldn't be fair not to talk about some of the challenges we've encountered, though. It's not always smooth sailing. It is a technology project. There's always going to be things that come up. And so let's dive into some of those. Privacy. It probably goes without saying, I hope it does, the Department of Education takes privacy for both our students and teachers and staff extremely seriously. It can't stress how big a deal this is for us. We're always very conscious of privacy matters, and so before we started down this track, we again took another independent analysis of the privacy risks and impacts of taking a solution like this. There's a few key things to note about this solution. We are limiting the personally identifiable information. We're not putting personal details up into this system. We're using identities that we already have down in our own Active Directory. So we're not pumping private information up into the cloud. It just makes it a little more politically palatable for us at this point in time. It's not to say we couldn't do it in the future, but obviously it needs to be treated very sensitively. So as I say, there were independent assessment ahead of time. There were a few little recommendations that came out of that that needed to be addressed, and I'm happy to say that we've been able to address all of those with the 365 platform. Also, ease of use. As I mentioned earlier, this has to be easy to use. It can't be difficult. It can't require additional training. It has to be intuitive. We really live in a time now where intuitive technology is now an expectation, and that's fantastic. It used to be that, the technology was delivered and you had to figure out how to use it. Now it should just work, and this is a solution that we feel targets that. And just giving the schools a level of customizability without giving them a wrecking ball to go and trash the site. That's quite a challenge in itself. The schools do want to customize the look and feel. They do want to put their own logos, stamp their own brand onto the sites, and that's important for them. It's actually very important. But at the same time, there's a potential that they can damage the experience for their own users. And so we were very, very careful about that. As I said, around privacy, we required consent up front before we put any school, any teacher, any student into this system. So we're very cautious about that. And when it comes to consent, it's got to be informed consent. We're not talking about just putting a checkbox on a page or getting the principal to sign off on something. Everybody needed to understand what we were doing with this. So it was very important for us to get that information out there and make sure that they knew what they were signing up for. Happy to report that we've had a really great uptake so far in the trial, and so we're hoping for some good results there to go a bit broader.
I think one of the interesting things that came into that as well, and the data sovereignty point, lots of the schools are already using cloud services. They really were. There is a lot of different services they were going out to because it was very hard for the department to provide this centralised service with the amount of infrastructure. So this kind of learning information was already being put into the cloud. And hence the data sovereignty issue was really about, are we doing anything that they're not doing today? Is there going to be report cards or any PII information like Aaron mentioned?
Mm. It's a really good point. When we did that initial survey, that initial study that happened up front, we identified something we pretty much already knew. Schools and students and individual teachers were going out and acquiring these services themselves. And when the department hasn't vetted any of that, hasn't really given it a good look at, obviously some concerns can come out of that. So it's a great point to bring up. The exchange address book was something that posed a little bit of a challenge to us. We needed to make sure that teachers weren't communicating with students outside of their own school and students weren't communicating outside. So it was about scoping the address book down to just give us a view that the student within the school sees other students and other teachers within that school. So that was quite important to us, and we were able to address that, which is great. In terms of the ease of use, it must have intuitive navigation. It must be very simple, as I've stressed a number of times. We addressed some accessibility requirements around large menus and buttons and trying to keep the interface very easy to use. Again, because the form factor of devices that this is being delivered to varies broadly between large desktop machines down to smartphones potentially or small Wi-Fi connected devices that they're using in the school classrooms now. So very important. And Elaine touched on it also, accessibility in the terms of for students and assisting staff that have either visual or learning disabilities or physical disabilities, which again is an area that the department is very keen to be addressing. It's critical for us. We have requirements around accessibility for all of the services we deliver, and we treat that very seriously as well. So being able to customise this platform a little bit to make that easier was also a great bonus. And just the removal of that complexity from tasks, which is something Elaine's going to demonstrate in a moment, how some tasks that you might want to perform within the platform can be made easier because of the use of particular client-side technologies. So that's also really interesting stuff. I might hand back over to Elaine, who can take us through one of those scenarios now.
Yeah, so, you know, I briefly demoed that news rotator on the top of the school site. So the department came to us and said, we want teachers and, you know, school admins to be able to add news that everyone can see. And we put on our SharePoint hat and said, yep, okay, this is how we always do that. The first way we built it was through pages. So you go new page, picked a particular page layout with a content type and allowed really, really flexible control of the content that goes into that news page. So you could edit, you know, word style, or you could go into the HTML, or you could put into pictures. And using that rapid prototyping approach we sort of mentioned, you know, at our next weekly sort of run through, we showed that to the department. First thing they said is, but why do I have to go new page? I want to go new news. And why do I have to drag a picture in this way? I want a little browse button. Essentially, the way that had worked for, you know, marketing managers on premises was just going to be very difficult for teachers to pick up without any training. And so we went back to the team and said, you know, can we do this a different way? Team said no. And no, we always do it through pages. This is how we do it. They need to be able to customise. They need to be able to drag and drop. And we said, well, no, actually they don't. Teachers just want a very, very basic, easy-to-use experience. All they need to do is fill in some text, select a couple of properties, put in a picture. Can we build that? And the team went back. Really only took about a day to actually switch it around to a different way, which I'll show you how it works now. And the end result of this is we're actually now going to do this for all our projects because it's really a lot easier for people to use. So very simple functionality. When I click the plus button, basically what we've got in here is just a custom list form on an item. And they can just go in. This is my news. Here's some content. Type as much as they like. They can put formatting, same sort of thing in there. And then we can target it to teachers and students, and if they want to, they can put a picture in there. With this picture dialog, you know, normally when you do a list item, you'd be attaching an attachment. That just wasn't going to cut it. So what we've done here is grab the select an asset picker off another place within SharePoint, linked in the button here, and basically reused its functionality. So we didn't have to build this piece. It's simply we built the browse button on there. And as it goes in, that's it. News is added. Really simple and basic. And the teachers now that have been training have been very, very easily been able to pick that up. And once we sort of started going through that piece, we learned that this is really the things we need to talk about. You know, how are we going to get things really easy, really, really simple and basic? So then we started thinking about our other admin tasks. And again, as a SharePoint, you know, developer that's been using this for years, I'm fine with going to this little cog up here and going site settings and, you know, adding things like that or adding an app. I know what an app is. Teachers, students, you know, they don't really know what a document library is or what an app is or any of those things. So what we did is we added in some toolbars at the top here. Again, most of these are just links to that same functionality. All we really built is a nice little toolbar to display it. And we show different things to different people. So you saw on the student site before, the Submit My Work. Students only see that, teachers and admins don't. This is the admin level one, where we allow them to create classes, change logos, change themes, or add to resources. So, you know, instead of having to go into a list and add an item, it's just right here on the front page. Same thing for a teacher on a teacher site. They've got a nice little toolbar that comes down and they can pick their most common tasks that they're going to do. So if they want to add a wiki or document library, picture library, very, very nice and basic. And this is stored in a way that's very customizable, and we can add to these at any point that we want to. Equally, one of the main tasks that teachers are actually going to have to do, you know, every sort of time a class changes, is they're going to want to create a new one. So we went through and we created a bit of wizard for this. This is how they create a class. So we go in, we create a class, do test class, bit of a description, technology stuff, and we go through. One of the things that we found interesting is the first time we created this wizard, basically what we did is, because we're doing all this through JavaScript, right, we created the class on that first next button click. And you got that nice little window that popped up and said, working on it. And that's okay, but because we're on a shared Office 365 platform over an internet connection, sometimes that working on it went for 15 seconds, sometimes it went for 2 minutes. Incredibly frustrating for a teacher to sit there that just wants to create a class and get stuck at that point. When we actually looked at the flow of it, we then thought, hang on, the next thing we're asking them to do is they're going to type in who the teacher is, and then we actually want them to go through and select all of their students. That's going to take them a little while to do, because they might have to select 15 students, or they might go to an Excel spreadsheet and copy and paste that in. So we've actually shifted the code around to run asynchronously, which means the teacher never has to see that working on it. It's actually created the class while I've been sitting here and typing in these bits and pieces. So when I go to this next, it's already created. If, however, I happened to not put any students in there, I would have seen that working on it dialogue for a little while longer. So that's all they have to do to create a class. And we'll jump into just a little bit of code just to show a couple of those features and how they work. So we definitely, from a development point of view, had to go through a big mind shift when we jumped onto 365. We're all used to writing C# code and doing full trust solutions, which you can't do in Office 365. So what we actually did here is did it all through the client object model. Some of these things are very simple. Some of the pieces required a lot more pieces of code. This piece you're seeing here is basically the main pieces of populating that news rotator at the top. So this is just using client object model calls and pushing it into a, you know, off-the-shelf jQuery rotator component. Essentially, what we have to do, and you follow this pattern for most client object model pieces, we create the client context, which site am I on, where am I going to get my content from, we get the web that we want, and then we load all the bits and pieces. So that's what we're doing here. We're basically creating a query, passing in a query to it, loading it up, and elsewhere in the code, we're actually then pushing the HTML that we want onto that jQuery slider. One of the other things that we had to do is, with the client context, you need to ask for everything that you want. And you want to be very efficient with this, because that's, you know, loading time for the end user potentially. So we're not only asking for the list items, but this line down here, we're actually asking for the permission set of the current user. Client object model always runs as a current user. So by doing this, and because we've got different permissions, I can tell whether it's a teacher or whether it's a student that's hitting this site. And that's how I work out, through testing this property, am I going to show a plus button to let them add more news? Am I going to show a plus button to add a new blog? Those kind of things. It's just that one call to load it up, and then I can test it anywhere within my code. So that one is really, you know, that's the main bit of that function, about 10 lines of code. There is about 100 lines of code all up, but that's really just about populating the HTML formatting. Now, if we flick over to the other side of things, this is the create class JavaScript. All up, it's significant. There is a lot of code that we've had to put in there because we're doing a wizard-style interface through that. Pretty much all the same sort of bits and pieces, but here's the actual call where we've gone through and we're doing an asynchronous call on this second next page click. So this is just passing it off for us, and then if it fails, it actually throws a function for an error, and when it completes, it actually returns a result that we can test elsewhere in our code. So very much the same concept as the news rotator, just a lot more JavaScript that we had to create to do this piece. And certainly something where we could look at, if we wanted to, moving it off the server into an app model. Now, the reason we didn't go with the app model off the server for this piece is because we actually want it to look like it's very, very easily embedded in SharePoint, and we wanted to create it up very quickly and easily in that tiny time period that we had. So we'll flick on back to the slides. All right, so what you saw there was using the client object model to enable a lot of that customization. Again, first time we went into this, you know, lots of the developer, we only had two developers that worked on this piece, and both of them weren't full time. So they were brand new to Office 365, never done any work, and within, you know, created all this within a 6 week time period. But they did have to flick their head around to say, no, can I do it with JavaScript rather than full trust code? How do I deal with the cloud technology? Also, we thought about where we were going to pause, really thinking about that user experience. Does it make sense for them to see a working on it window? No, we're in asynchronous JavaScript here. We can do asynchronous calls and hide all that processing from the user. But it wasn't something we initially thought of until we started showing it to people. We've also used some technology called image renditions, and this allows us to do things around sizing the images and making them very efficient. I'll talk about how that works in a minute. So with the client object model, if you're new to it, this is just a slide that has a link where you can go to get more information. The link down the bottom has a lot of common client object model links. But really, if you follow the pattern of basically creating that client context, loading whatever you need to get access to, the list, the library, the permissions, anything like that, and then executing the query. So are you selecting results out? Are you going to push back a submit? All those kind of things. And the one thing to remember is the code always runs as a current user. So one of the challenges we had with that when we started to think about that submit my work piece I talked about earlier, what you would do on premises normally would be you would have the student submit their work through, and then you could set permissions on that item through a workflow or something like that so that the other people couldn't see that work after it was submitted. We actually found that quite challenging because the student is submitting the work as them, and we want to remove their permissions from that work afterwards. It wasn't something we could do through the client object model. So the way we've taken that is when we create the class site, we actually provision a folder per student and permission things away at that point so the students can't see each other's work and it's all secured at that point. But we had to shift it around to a teacher doing some of those security pieces because the teacher has the correct permission level to do that. You do have to think about who's running the code if you want to set things like permissions, workflows, emails.
Just to be clear on that, when Elaine says that the teacher is doing that work, it's actually the code doing that work under the teacher's permission set, so there's no manual effort involved there.
Yep, good point. So image rendition. So basically what we're doing on that news page, when we've asked them to put that image in there, it's automatically resized on the fly in the browser depending on where it's shown. And it's not the old way SharePoint used to resize things. It's really resizing that image. So when we go into the news page, it's showing a very small thumbnail, and that comes down as a very small image to their mobile devices. When it's shown on that image slider at the front, that's a nice large image of exactly the specification that we want. And what this means is when a teacher adds the news image, all they have to do if they want to load their own one up instead of using one of the stock ones that we've provided for them, as long as it's in the right aspect ratio, wherever that image is shown across the site, it will display in the correct sizing. So that really allows them to be very consistent. And again, all this stuff, even though it's for 365, we're showing it here, you can do it on premises as well. With this one, if you are doing it on premises, you will need to turn on blob caching for it to be available. So the next challenge we had is, what Aaron mentioned earlier, I think he described it as not giving the school a wrecking ball. And it really was a bit of a challenge because we do want them to own the site. We don't want them to be able to break too much on there. We want it to be able to look fairly good, have some level of consistency. So we wanted them to change the logos. That's pretty easy, right? Change the top logo at the top, fine, nice and easy to use. But we want them to actually change the entire background image, and we want them to change the colours throughout the entire site, which we'll demo in a minute. But we still want it to be consistent through those customizations. We don't want it to look, you know, if they want to go red and there's all of a sudden a green little piece down the bottom that they can't pick and choose through. So when we look at branding, there's really, you know, sort of a three-step level of branding approaches we normally take. What we call full effort branding is where we go in and we create custom master pages and page layouts. And traditionally, this is how we do a lot of our on-premises branding. The problem with this is if you start then allowing schools and teachers to create whatever they like, Sometimes your master page or your page layout, the colours, the style and formatting will not suit that artifact. It's very common with SharePoint 2010, for example, that your branding would break when it went to a search centre. That's a different master page, it wouldn't apply. So really, really very hard to do custom master pages and display some of those pieces and have it flow through to any possible thing that a student, that a teacher might select to use. So the middle sort of medium effort there is you can use Design Manager, and this is a new feature in SharePoint 2013, to do some of the branding for you, and you can kind of have it create up these branding styles. That works really well for a single site collection. But the challenge here is we've actually got multiple site collections per, we've got one site collection per school. So this kind of medium approach wasn't going to work for us. What we actually did in the end is use some of what's called the low effort kind of pieces, the composed look. So it's the theming engine of SharePoint 2013. And we've gone through and used some of this theming engine and actually then taken those artifacts out. And when we provision a new school site, which we do via PowerShell, we then load up all our themes and pieces and make sure that they can take the customizations that we want. So we'll flip back to our demo and we'll have a look at changing around some colors. All right, so within this toolbar here, you can see that we've given them the change theme icon. If we click on that, it'll load up a dialog. Again, we've given them a bunch of pre-populated backgrounds just so they can select from some images, you know, if they don't have to load up their own. Later in the process, if they do want to, they can pick their own. This is actually using the composed look feature within SharePoint 2013, and all we've done is really put that wizard-like approach on top of it. So it loads the picture that they choose. If they want to drag and drop a new one onto there, they can. We've put a bunch of pre-populated styles up here they can select on through. They can change their fonts, but we've stopped them from changing the master page because we do want to make sure that some of these features, like report abuse, are permanently stored within there. Then it gives them the ability to try it out, and this will go through and actually, you know, do a bit of that branding, pick up the composed look, and then it should apply it to the site. Some of the things that we had to do to make this work are really around trying to make sure that we didn't hard code styles absolutely anywhere within this code. And we'll decide to keep this one. So what we did is when we created a lot of the images, for example, all these images in here, you can see they've changed color. They were pink before, now they're purple. So they're basically transparent PNGs where only this, you know, all the background color from those squares behind flow through to every one of those customizations. And that's right through all the other elements as well, where we can see all the headings have changed to match those styles, and we've got our background image that we selected, and we've deliberately only put that down the bottom half of the page because they didn't want it to take away from some of these navigation elements at the top. And if we flick across, we'll have a look at some of those bits and pieces. So basically, as part of this engine, there's now a way to create HTML master pages, and SharePoint will automatically convert them to .master files for you. And so that's what we did. We basically grabbed one of the out-of-the-box master pages and we created our own. And here's the HTML for that. You'll see a lot of it's commented out, but what this means is the way this renders, we didn't have to use SharePoint Designer. The designers can use any design tool they like. And they edited the HTML, then we loaded it into SharePoint. It converted it through to your traditional master page, which really looks like you expect. Now then what we wanted to do is drag this out of the system, you know, the demo system where we created it in, and make sure we could provision it through PowerShell. When we auto-provision these, what we do is we just push up the .master file. We don't need to use that HTML file anymore because it's already done the conversion for us. Then within our CSS, we're doing a few different things in here where you can see there's some syntax where it says replace color. This is how that theming engine knows where to go into our CSS and say, oh, that theme they picked with the blue, well, put blue in here and use that as some of those color pieces. And that's right throughout the CSS. And we generated that up with the SharePoint composed look piece. To help with these composed looks, there's actually a color palette tool that Microsoft's created, and I've got the link for downloading this. And as a designer, what you can go through is you can go and pick and choose all the different individual elements and create up your own palette and even have a look at what it's going to look like on a standard site. This is just an Exe. Doesn't need SharePoint, can just run on your laptop and away it goes without connecting on through. You can even load a background image in. This will then return an SP color file, which is what you actually load up into SharePoint to create any one of those themes. Let's click on back to the slides. So basically the summary pieces you saw there, we did have to do some master page changes, but we made these very, very, very minimal. The master page and page layouts were really around just those layout pieces. What we used for all the branding was some of the new composed look features with SP colour files that allow us to pick and choose the colour scheme, the whole range of colours that we're going to use, and we flowed them through all our customisations. How we generated these colour files was using this colour tool that I mentioned, and that's up there on the Microsoft site that you can download. Did take our graphic designer probably a good week to get his head around this concept, but now again we're starting to use this on premises as well for a lot of our intranets and those pieces as well, to give the ability to change the flexible styles. You know, for your team sites you might want a different colouring through to your community sites, those kind of things. Also in general, some of the lessons learnt on, this was a very large Office 365 project. You know, we don't often do a pilot for 30,000 people. That's usually a full rollout for most of our customers. It did take our team that was working on this a little while to get used to dealing with the new cloud platform, because most of the team hadn't worked on Office 365 when they started this project. One of the big bit of learning, it sounds kind of obvious, was we had to use the Microsoft support team. But even the infrastructure guy on the project dealing with the single sign-on pieces was sort of very hesitant to do that at first, because we're so used to, no, this is our problem, we have to fix it, we have to go through, and you know, we're used to on-premises, we have to turn the servers off and on again. But with anything in Office 365, there are a lot of pieces out of your control. So when you come across problems, what we pretty rapidly found was the first thing you do is you click put in a support ticket. The guys call you back typically within 24 hours and a very smooth and efficient support process for helping us with any of those issues that we did encounter. And because this was quite, you know, it's quite a complex identity piece set up with this particular tenant, and some of the other things we're doing of scale, you know, we had to get some of the limits raised, for example, to ensure we could synchronise all the users up there that we need to do.
That gives us a lot of confidence as well, because our own people within the department had to work with those same support teams within Microsoft. So knowing that we have that support there 24/7 is also a big bonus for this project.
Yeah, absolutely. It also did require a different approach to traditional projects, and this was some of the big benefits that Aaron talked about earlier, I think. Normally, what we would do is it'd be weeks before we could even start a project like this, because, you know, there's certain change control to provision new services at a typical government department. But from day one, the second the contract was signed to start working, we provisioned a tenant and we were up and running in that development cycle, which is how we could show things to the department within, you know, 6 weeks. It was basically all done. But also we did have to get our head around of, you know, on premises, we're so used to SharePoint 2010 style writing lots of server-side code. We had to flick over to doing everything with the client object model and JavaScript. Also with the branding, we had to embrace the new SharePoint branding features and use those to get the flexibility that we wanted to. So there was a certain learning curve. It wasn't steep, but it did require us to keep thinking about that for every piece that we built. And when we really did learn, you know, it was about the second week I sort of started saying to the developers, they'd come and ask me, how should I build this? Every time I responded, it was, what's easy for the users? And then by, you know, the third week, they were saying, hey, I'm going to build it this way because it will be very easy for the users. So once we got that through the team, they got very good at really concentrating on that user experience, and we're hoping that this will really make it easy as we go towards the wider rollout around all these schools so they can jump on without doing any training. And we actually did bring in a series of principals and some of the teachers from some of our trial schools, and they've actually done some... basically, you know, UAT on this to give us some feedback, and we made some tweaks to make it even better. Also, we've got the first time we heard about these branding requirements, we did think it was going to be very challenging to make Office 365 look great. But once we got in there, it was a lot more flexible than we thought. So it is one of the great things to think about exactly how you can customise this platform. And even though there are limitations in terms of what you can do via server-side code, once you get the model right, you can do almost anything to the platform you need. With some of the features around making it easy for users of the solution, we also did change some of the navigation elements. And I might just jump over and quickly show these.
While that's cutting over, It's also great for us, the department, because we know that the skill set around developing on this platform is a commodity web developer skill set, essentially. So knowing that we have a broad range of other vendors that can support this, our own people internally as well can support this platform, gives us a lot more confidence to go forward with it. We're not dealing with difficult to use server-side coding technologies anymore. The department has a substantial SharePoint 2010 presence at the moment, and we've felt that pain around complex server-side code being developed. So knowing that we're going into something that's a little bit easier to maintain and a little bit more of a commodity skill is also a real benefit for us.
Absolutely. And so one of the things that we did is we actually customized this top toolbar across here, and some people don't realize they can do that in Office 365. Out of the box, it's great if you're a small business tenant. You know, this link here would traditionally go through to a help site, which is not, you know, really what we want the teachers going through when they click on this. It has a generic Office 365 logo. So what we've done is we've customized that to go back to the school site and it clicks on through. We also found that as you go into things like Outlook, you can get lost, and it gets a little bit hard to get back to that school and teacher site because there's so many site collections up here. So we did a very simple customization to this piece, and it's just going to pop it open in a new window, basically, so they can always get backwards and forwards. What we found, though, however, with this toolbar, the reason we had to pop it in a new window is because we can control this toolbar through JavaScript in Office 365, the SharePoint piece. However, once you get into Outlook and Outlook and Link, there is no capability to customize that piece, so we couldn't provide links there to get back. That's why we took that approach of just pop a new tab or pop a new window so they can navigate backwards and forwards.
Yeah, again, something that's very important for us, that ease of use. And we don't want the teachers or students to get lost as they navigate around through this solution. So, again, just another example of how with the 365 platform, you can make those sorts of changes. You can customize that flow and the navigation and the interface, and that's really great. So to sort of summarise all of that, we talked a little bit about the project goals, what we set out to achieve, why we chose Office 365. Look, generally, we're really excited about where this is going. We're very pleased with the solution that's been developed to date, but ultimately, it's up to the students and the teachers and the schools that are trialling this. So we'll get their feedback, and we'll do not just feedback, but actually study their usage, look at whether they are getting efficiency gains out of this, whether it's hitting the targets that it set out to hit. And if so, we'll look at rolling it out more broadly. As we've talked about, that process is dead simple. So we're really excited. We've talked through some of those challenges and lessons learnt, but you can come and talk to us for the rest of the day, on the last day of the conference now. But if you want to have a chat to us about any of these challenges or things that we've achieved through this, please don't hesitate to come up and have a chat to us. And maybe we can take some questions as well, yeah? Yeah, so for those that couldn't hear, ultimately it's a question of cost and comparison of on-site or in our own existing data centres to in the cloud. And it's a great point, something we haven't touched on at all, actually, in the presentation. But we did a lot of analysis into that. Obviously, the trade-offs tend to be around on-premises or data centre-hosted infrastructure and also then internet bandwidth. The department has a very interesting configuration around that. We actually purchase a very large amount of bandwidth to deliver services out to our schools through a WAN called the VicSmart. That changes the dynamics of those calculations a little bit, which probably don't apply to other organisations. But in terms of the infrastructure and the provisioning of services and even the services engagement with OBS to deliver that solution, the cost was extremely competitive and in most areas was more cost effective than traditional approaches. It will vary depending on your circumstances, but there are calculators online and there are, Microsoft will be happy to talk to you about how that works out. But we've been very impressed with the cost so far.
Yep.
What I might do with that one is maybe just talk at a high level from our perspective and then pass over to Elaine to talk a little bit more about the technical side of it. But for us, we've been steering towards service-oriented architectures in our on-premises applications for some time now, and that's a general industry trend. So there's nothing fancy there. With those kinds of architectures and with applications that have extensive APIs, like for example, Microsoft have been very big in pushing their applications to provide web service interfaces. And so because of that trend that we've seen, it has actually been quite easy. As Elaine alluded to earlier, the Fuse application, which the department developed about four years ago, but in development for a bit longer than that, that application already had interfaces exposed to allow that kind of integration. So it will come down to the particular details. Is there anything you want to add to that, Elaine?
Yeah, absolutely. We have dealt with a number of old technologies for other customers. We didn't have the problem on this project. But Office 365 is really built for claims-based authentication. It's built for things like if you connect the Enviro, RSS, OData. They are relatively new technologies. Some systems don't have that. So what we did for another customer is we had two choices, really. Build a web services layer. That was going to be extensive, the integration we wanted to do. Or what we actually did in that case was put some on-premises code that runs basically as a timed job that just pushes the data up into Office 365. So there, we're using the server side, the .NET version of the client object model. Very, very little code to do it, and it pushes the data up into the place we needed in Office 365 and integrated those two systems together that way. Now, the reason we did it that way as well was also to ensure that we weren't adding any load onto that internal system. Again, it was a very, very old system, and putting a real-time web service layer on top was a real concern for them that it would be hitting back a lot as Office 365 was really taking off. So we decoupled the two with some code on-premises to push it up. Again, a little bit of a different approach. You know, normally we always put a services layer, real-time communication, but we had the flexibility to choose between any of those. Mm. With the app model of SharePoint 2013 that you can use through Office 365, we could even do really big integration pieces there if we needed to. So full interfaces that look like SharePoint, function like SharePoint, but connect through to back-end data. But that wasn't needed for this customer.
That might be something we look at later. Yeah. It's also worth mentioning that method for pushing data into Office 365 could be through PowerShell. So there's a lot of different avenues for doing that sort of stuff. I'll take this question here. Probably throw to Elaine for that one, bit more technical.
The question was, you know, we're all running in the same tenant here, right? So how do we achieve isolation so that each school can only see their own information? So there was some challenges there, and some of it is through kind of, we did take a little bit of work to do. So what we're doing is the administrators of the system, people at the department like Aaron, they can actually see right across the entire system. For every school, from a SharePoint point of view, we chose to give them a site collection. And we've done the site collection piece, so that gives us a natural boundary where any information there is purely provisioned from a permissions level to that school and that school only. And then we are able to, through Active Directory groups, ensure that we preset those permissions, and the department did actually already have the Active Directory groups necessary for those pieces. So that secures away each school site from other schools. We are not preventing, however, the ability for an admin to go in and open up that permission to other schools if they want to, because there is a need to be able to do that in some cases. With students, they don't have anything other than email or link where they can communicate with other students and other teachers. So for that piece, we use the Exchange dress book policies, where we're picking up a department field on their account and putting an address book policy in there to only limit that address book to show them students that are in their own school. They are actually able, if they know the identifier of the student, to be able to go in and type their email address and send the email across. We could actually prevent that with transport rules if we wanted to, so that's another feature of Exchange we can use there. However, the department felt it wasn't necessary to do that piece because if a student gives another student their email address, they want to be able to communicate on that platform. It'd be the same as them getting their Outlook.com email address and handing that over. So all we've done is really block the visibility of them being able to pick another student without having that conversation of, you know, what's your email address? Can you give it to me? Are we allowed to communicate? And that's all in that privacy pack that Aaron mentioned at the start, that's actually given through to each school to say, these are the things you can do, these are the things you can see and you can't see. And that is then actually given home to each parent with a form to sign to say, are you okay with these things to happen? So that gives us the capability to do things on the platform. Yes, absolutely. So all you need is there are some settings to do that, and maybe grab me afterwards. I can give you some links for some of those settings. And you'll have to log a service call if you need to do more than about 30 address book policies, which we're going to have to do for this one. But it is a feature that you're able to do. Yep, so the question there was around what are we doing for compliance and are we using online archiving? At this point in time, no. This proof of concept is on the A2 SKU of Office 365, which actually means it's totally free for the department. And that's deliberately done for the proof of concept. What they'll be looking at doing then is if they choose to go for the further rollout next year, they will look at considering upping that to the A3 SKU, which allows archiving. At this point in time, because it is proof of concept work and it's student email, which has never existed within the department before, they're not worried about the archiving piece. That, however, was one of the decision factors as for not putting teacher email up there because they already have exchange with archiving and all those policies on those pieces. Yeah, the question is, what if someone stuffs up the SharePoint site? Can they recover it completely? Yep, firstly, there's recycle bin functionality within SharePoint both, you know, so if they delete the button, and only a very, very high permission level can do that, they can actually delete out the site. What we did with the provisioning piece of this is we've actually provisioned it all through PowerShell, and that's through a number of different functions that goes through and sets up every single piece of the school site. So if they didn't hit delete, but they actually created it, you know, managed to do incredibly nasty things to the point where the whole site corrupted, we would have the choice then of deleting parts of the site and using our PowerShell script to reinstantiate those bits and pieces. And that was one of the reasons why we went with quite a fine-grained PowerShell approach so that we can restore some of those pieces back of the site. And that's where sort of Aaron said earlier, while there's a low level of support for this system, in terms of who's going to look after it in the department, there is a team of people that, if they have a problem like that, they can put in the call, you know, to the department and have those features restored.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So with the departments already using SharePoint quite extensively, we do already have a large support team in place. We think that support team would not need to be quite as large with a solution like this. So there's, you know, potential savings there for us as we move more and more into the cloud. But it's not management free. It's as with any large system like this. So, but we're happy with the level of support that it's going to need. Yeah. Up the back.
Yeah, good question. So the question was, is there a risk that our customizations could become corrupt or get lost as new Office 365 versions come out? That is one of the challenges with Office 365. The platform underneath you is always changing. So, you know, they can update new features and add bits and pieces anytime they like. And even during this little period of time, there was one major update to Office 365, and we're about to go through the second one when they're going to add the extra gigabytes of space and, you know, recycle bin, those kind of pieces. We've been very careful with how we've coded this to try to make sure that we're using well-documented APIs and not hard-coding any URLs or any bits and pieces like that to try to prevent that from happening. And what we've also done is some of our customizations, even though they're on every school site, they're stored centrally. So if that news rotator needs updating, we can update one script file and it will flow across to every single school site. So if there was a way that they changed it that broke that piece, we can very rapidly update it. But it is something that we're looking at all the time. So far, none of it's broken, and we think it will be fairly stable.
We'll keep taking some questions if you like, but just so you guys know, I'll be on the Microsoft stand for the rest of the afternoon. Elaine will be around, although she does have another session to present. So if you do want to come and approach us at any time, you can ask questions. I'm obviously less technical on this project, but my background is in SharePoint development, so hopefully I can answer some of those more general questions, just not specifically around the technical aspects of this project. But as I say, Elaine will be around as well, so by all means, come and grab one of us if you see us about. Any other questions in the audience? Yes?
The question was, can you restore a library or a site to a point in time a year ago? Currently, no. No, there's even if you hit delete, the recycle bin is currently set to 30 days by default. It's going to be raised in the update that's running through 365 now. And we're not doing any off-site archiving or anything like that to make sure that we keep a version of this site for records management purposes or anything like that. You could add on features to be able to do that, and certainly with Exchange, there's an archiving piece you can use as well to do those pieces. But being a proof of concept, it's not something we've had to address at this point in time. There's been no records management applied to this yet. Also, it would be a bit of a challenge in terms of where the department would store that 15 terabytes worth of information if it's all in use, if you wanted to restore back to a point in time. It's not really what Office 365 is built for. We'd have to look at perhaps storing it in, I don't know, Azure space or something like that.
Yeah, we were aware of some of those limitations going in. So for this particular proof of concept, it's not a big problem for us, but we are always conscious of backup restore, and we have a substantial records management piece on premises at the moment. So it is something we've considered, but for this particular application, it wasn't a deal breaker for us at this point. And we fully expect that as the platform matures and more of the third-party vendors get involved, we'll see more and more add-ons and additional software that we can deploy that will assist us in that area.
Yeah, it'd be very different if we were doing report cards or something like that where it was very personal information. We needed to store versions of that. At the moment, it is purely collaborative learning information that's only really valid for the period of that class, which might be a term or it might be a year worth of information.
Yeah. So we won't be keeping those class sites beyond the period that they're actually in use because of the fact that they do change every year. They do change every term even. So not such a big deal for us. Anyone else got anything? Yes?
So the question is around the submit my work piece. Basically, how does that work so that the permissions are removed for the student once it's submitted through? What we're doing there is we create those folders on the class site. So we create a folder per student, and that's all running as the automated script. And then we apply a workflow, and that workflow is applied to run as the teacher. So they don't have to click on anything. As soon as the work's submitted on through, we actually kick something off that changes where it goes, puts it into a folder, and it's only submitted through to that teacher with different permission sets. The teacher also gets an email to notify them, hey, there's some work sitting there ready to be marked, because we didn't want them to have to keep checking, has someone submitted their work today, that piece. So that was one of the more challenging things to work out, the sequence of events and who was going to run which piece of code. But through the combination of workflow and pre-provisioning those folders with permissions, we're able to do it.